One Show, One Drink, part of the What We Watch, When We Drink podcast from Booze Dancing Entertainment Network and your transmission specialists.
So wait, we got a bar and grill and we're transmission specialists?
We are all over the place. We are your multi-talented entertainment network.
You know why? Because we're so money.
We are so money. And tonight we are money times three.
The next show, it's going to be Casino Hotel. I'm feeling really good.
So tonight we got a really fun movie and we've got a really fun whiskey. We're going to talk about Swingers tonight.
Vegas, baby. Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby.
Classic movie from 1996, I believe.
Over 25 years.
And we are going to be drinking tonight a scotch from the Speyside region of Scotland, Glenmurray.
You know why? Because any Glen will do.
Glenlivet, Glenfiddich, any Glen will do.
So we'll talk a little bit about whiskey first, boys.
Before we do that, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's roll the intro. Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Media podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy libations. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And you can find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, drink, cocktail, show suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Let's talk whiskey. Let's talk single malt whiskey. Let's talk a distillery-only pouring. This is a bottle that my family, my daughters, helped me pour when I took them to Scotland a few years ago at Glenmurray. And with the help of our friend Ian Allen, who's now distillery manager, I believe, at Glenmurray, we were lucky enough to kind of get a little tour of the place and then spend some time and dollars in the gift shop, including pouring our own 13-year-old bourbon barrel pick, 60.4%. So this is your high ABV distillery-only dram.
So this is a whiskey with a six.
Not a five, not a four, a six.
So what made you decide to go, of all the places to go to Glenmurray? You knew a guy behind the guy. Or was it? It just fortuitously worked out that you got to go there.
I had been to Scotland with the Single Cask Nation guys, Jason and Joshua, 4 or 5 years before. And one of the distilleries we went to was Glenmurray. And the boys were friendly with the distillery manager at the time, Graham Cool, and his wife, who lived on premises. And so we kind of kept in contact. They actually gave us the idea of where we stayed in Speyside and gave us some great restaurant ideas and gave us some great places to see, tourist spots to go to, just lovely people. So that's how we went back. And now the Cools, Graham is now, they had left Glenmurray, and he is now the distillery manager at Dingle in Ireland. So there you go. That's the Glenmurray story.
So when you go to Ireland, you can call him up, go to Dingle.
I've been there once and it's beautiful and I would love to go back and see them as well.
I asked that question because this is not a whiskey you typically see on the shelves, Glenmurray. It doesn't seem like it has a big U.S. presence. Maybe it's a little bigger on, you know, in L.A. or in New York as opposed to in other areas. But we,
do you mean the brand? The brand itself.
You don't see it that often. And we had a great conversation with Deanna.
Deanna Powell, right.
And she was able to share some of their expressions with us. And it's a really good whiskey.
It's funny that it is. I mean, it's a 100-plus-year-old distillery. The classic range is very reasonably priced and solid. You can't say anything bad about it.
No, they were all very good.
It almost seems as if it's a whiskey that was used as part of a blend, so it didn't get the play on its own. And now that they're bottling it on its own, it's coming out as, you know, this is a really good whiskey, and you should probably try it, especially for the price point.
Out here, if you go into Total Wine or BevMo, they've got the whole line. How's that 60.4 doing on there, Mike?
That's got some heat, man. Yeah. You know, hey, by the way, you know what? We forgot one thing. One important thing. We didn't cheers. Gentlemen, cheers.
Cheers. Ooh, that's hot.
That's got a kick, man.
That is,
this stuff is potent.
That is nice.
That's good. That's nice.
Oh, that is good.
That is nice. I don't know how this is still around. 2018? I'd have finished this.
it's more than halfway gone.
That's yeah. Boy, that's nice.
There's a lot of classic Speyside-ness to it. There's a little bit of heatheriness. It's there's some fruits to it. There's no peat. There's no smoke.
It's not particularly oily mouthfeel wise, and it's pretty much all up front, but it's got a nice rounded flavors, really good balance.
I like the warmth that lingers with you.
Yeah, it's a nice finish.
It's just really welcoming. It doesn't put me off at 60.4. I mean, when it,
no,
it doesn't, whoa, I can't drink this. Whereas a lot of people would say, hey, this is too hot.
The first sip is, you know, the palate adjuster. And mm-hmm. once you get to that first sip, you go, all right, I shouldn't drink a whole lot of this quickly. I should sip this because it's awfully strong. But you get a lot of fruit, like apples, maybe pears, something like that up front. And there's a little bit of vanilla. And then it's like a lot of good baking spices in there. It's nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
That is very good. I like it.
It's really nice.
It makes me want to swing. And on that note, let's talk swingers.
When you say swing, you mean swing dancing?
Let's say swing dancing, yes, sure.
Well, he's in L.A. You never know.
That's true. You never know. Tea parties and whatnot, you know.
Hey now.
So I have to admit that I've probably seen this movie twice when it first came out and this time. It was like watching a movie all over again, or for the first time.
I have seen this probably over 50 times, or maybe not in its entirety, but at the very least, I've walked in on scenes and just sat there and watched it to the end.
I might be 10. But it's similarly where it's on, you're flipping around, you find it, and you're just like, I'll watch it. I'll watch this part. You know, something else happens.
It's one of those movies I don't think I come across on TV very often.
I think I'm drawn to it, too. It's like, oh, Swingers is on. Let me watch a little bit of it. Because no matter where you walk in.
This is your Red October.
Well, that too. That's another one. I've seen Red October. If you piece it all together, I've probably seen it 50 times also.
That, me too. Yeah, easily.
I would have loved to see Montana.
Hey. That's another episode.
I saw this when it came out, and I loved it from start to finish. I saw it in the theater. There's like a little movie theater in town in Philadelphia, the Ritz. I remember going to the Ritz. You know, I first started dating my wife at the time. We were dating for about 2 years. I went with a couple of friends from her from college, or I'm sorry, friends of hers from high school. We had all gone together to see it, and I just have really fond memories of watching it. And then every time it's on. I think I own the DVD as well.
So what draws you to it?
The humor, the music, you know, the acting.
It's the stylistic notes, the way they're dressed, the cars they drive. Yeah.
Everything.
Just the language, the patois between the guys. They go to a party in Hollywood. There's five guys. They take five cars. They all walk out. They all get in their car. And you're like, this, it's the sort of thing you're like, it's just so stylistically, it's so funny that they would do that. You wouldn't all pile into one car and drive and come back.
Well, and what's great too about it is I think it's also, it launched so many careers, you know, just between Favreau and Vince Vaughn and who's the other guy?
Ron Livingston,
those three guys alone.
And, you know, and one of the other guys, Alex Desert. I don't know how you say his name. He goes on to be in Becker for years.
Right.
Like and he's been a voice actor. Like he's had a career too, all from this movie.
And then you've got Heather Graham and just the whole L.A. thing and just going to the bars, and they're in real bars. They're not like on a soundstage somewhere. These are real places, real locations.
And the director goes on to do Go, the Bourne Identity movies, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Edge of Tomorrow, you know, Covert Affairs. He's done a lot of stuff, you know, but it isn't like he's fizzled out either.
You know, it's almost like, you know, like when you first find a band you like. What was the first band you listened to? Like you listened to their first album and you've been a fan ever since.
Nirvana, let's say.
And you watch these guys like blossom and grow, and you watch their careers evolve, and they had some pitfalls, and it wasn't all smooth sailing all the way, but, you know, these guys are still in the game.
So, you said a couple things. One, the LA part of it's really, really exciting to me, right? Because you're seeing these places some of them I've been to or driven by, and now, you know, if I saw this back then, I wouldn't have thought much about, oh, they're in this bar, this in the bar, as bars they probably didn't know about. Now that we're sort of in this drinking culture world that we are in the last 10 years, it's way more interesting on that level. It's a movie also about Hollywood, struggling actors.
Yeah, the show has a sense of place.
It has a sense of place. It's a movie in Hollywood about Hollywood. And about the struggles of Hollywood. 25 years later, did you think that Jon Favreau would be Jon Favreau directing Star Wars movies or whatever, or Marvel movies? You're right. It feels like this farm club era movie, and these guys blossom into, you know, major league Hall of Famers.
Somebody gives you $5 million to make a movie. They make a movie, and then you're like, wow, these guys are good. Let's give them other stuff to do.
Yeah, 5 million. I don't think they had 5 million. I think they had much less than that.
Oh, I'm sure it was way less. Yeah.
This is like a tester. We're just going to give you something. Make this movie like a Project Greenlight. You know, that's what it feels like.
And, well, what's great about it too, it's a low budget movie, and you start reading some of the facts, and they said, you know, like I think when they filmed at the Dresden, they couldn't shut the Dresden down. They had real people in the place.
To save money also, right?
And the scenes in Favreau's apartment, that's Favreau's apartment. And the car that Vaughn drives, that's Favreau's car. It's like, yeah, where'd you get that from? Well, that's actually my car.
I was reading something about it. They were talking about, like, there's a scene where they're shooting in Favreau's apartment, and he opens the fridge, and there's nothing in the fridge. And they said the reason they did that is because they couldn't afford the lights and all that. So they needed the light in the fridge to light the scene.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
It's just hysterical, just all the stuff they did. You know, like they weren't allowed to shoot in some of the casinos. Yeah. And there was like a scene at the end of the movie with the bunny rabbit. And apparently they weren't allowed to do that. And they had to, and they pretty much got thrown out of the bar because of like Board of Health standards.
The scene on the highway when the police come and they assured the police officer that no one was filming. And they had a handheld camera going the whole time. So they had a splice handheld with actual, you know, real movie cameras going because they wanted to catch real stuff going on because, you know, hey, what are you guys doing? You're not allowed to be over here. No, we're not filming anything. We're just over here and we're going to leave now.
Every era goes through a cultural nostalgia period, right? This is a movie about that, right? No one was really dressing like that in 96. But these guys, they want to be that 50s era cool swinger kind of guys.
Yeah.
And it looks funny in a lot of ways, right? Vince Vaughn, of course, looks so out of place in a lot of the scenes he's in because no one else looks like him. Yeah. And he's not that cool, but he thinks he's really cool. And it's interesting watching that kind of thing because there's always guys in bars or women in bars who are dressing like they're in a different era.
And stylistically, they do two different shots. One where they do a walkthrough of a restaurant that they stole from Goodfellas, and that's the kind of clothes they're wearing. And they do the other walkthrough when they're walking to the cars, which is the walk up from Reservoir Dogs, where it's a slow-mo, stylistic kind of thing. And again, Reservoir Dogs, they're kind of dressed like that. You're like, so you kind of stole. And again, if you're not stealing, you're not trying, right? So
well, and the best part about it is before they do both, they have a whole conversation about everybody steals from everybody, and you know, they're going back and forth about Scorsese and Tarantino and
but I think, you know, they kind of stylistically took the wardrobe from those kinds of movies because they're the movies they wanted to emulate. They're, you know, right on board with them. And it works.
You sense that they're the kind of guys in the 90s who they're just getting going. They're just out of college and they've been sitting around for years talking about the movies they want to be able to make and the movies that they are influenced by and why they want to make movies that look like this or movies or actors they want to, that they really respect. This is like a culmination of a lot of that. Somebody's given us a million bucks to do this. We're going to get to do these things that we've talked about in front of our TVs with beer and popcorn. And now we're going to get to do it.
Well, you're waiting to see whether or not we got the part as goofy. At least it's Disney.
It's Disney. It's Disney.
I didn't get it.
You take everything out of the movie, though, and you distill it down and you filter. And it's ultimately about friendship. It's about a guy down on his luck and his friends are just trying to support him and, you know, get him back into the game. He's sulking over this girl and all that nonsense. And they're just like, come on, man, you got to snap out of it. Get busy.
It could be anything, right? It could be an office comedy. It doesn't matter. It's about how these guys relate to each other. Are they standing up for each other in the face of, you know, financial issues or girlfriend issues? You're right. That's what it's about. The movie stuff and the culture of the time is really cool to see. It's really fun to see. It wouldn't be fun to watch this if it wasn't office comedy.
You do the little, you know, research, 6 degrees of separation kind of stuff. And you look back and it's like everything that goes on after that is all tied to the movie Encino Man.
What?
Because Encino Man makes Brendan Fraser and Sean Astin marketable. And Brendan Fraser makes School Ties with Damon and Affleck and their careers go crazy. And Sean Astin makes Rudy with Favreau and Vince Vaughn and their careers go crazy. So if you didn't have Encino Man, none of this stuff happens.
Wow. That's amazing. The 6 degrees of Encino Man.
And they're all right after one another. It's like 92, 93, 95, you know, all the stuff's in there.
Yeah.
But then there's all the little things you find out about the movie later. Like, you know, the card playing scene in the beginning of the movie when they're at the casino.
Yeah.
the little old lady is John Favreau's aunt or grandmom or something. And the one guy is Vince Vaughn's dad. You know, they just kind of did it on a shoestring budget.
Absolutely. Who's going to play that role? I'll call somebody.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, what are you doing?
I'll call somebody. You got some time? You got 10 minutes to sit at a table? Thanks.
It's so good. And I think it's pretty tight. And there's really no wasted scenes. It doesn't go too long. I think the runtime is excellent. It's really well edited. It's funny. I also like that the beginning of the movie, the very first scene with Ron Livingston and John Favreau in the diner, pretty much tells you what's going to happen at the end, which is just great. It's just so, they just tie it all together. So great. It's just funny. Yep. And also what I also like towards the end, it was almost like the whole Seinfeld thing where it flips. Vince Vaughn is like the guy and he's getting all the girls.
Even Steven.
Right. And then Favreau's luck kind of changes when he meets Heather Graham. You know, Vince Vaughn's like a buffoon by the end. It's just so funny.
So I found this list of little known facts about the movie. We kind of touched on a couple, but one, Favreau wrote this whole screenplay in a week and a half. The studios wanted Trent to be a female character or to be played by Johnny Depp. Can you imagine that?
No.
That would not be good.
No Depp.
Favreau's grandmother and Vince Vaughn's father went to Vegas with them.
That's what you're saying. They're the people at the tables.
She's the one that gets the breakfast, right?
That's right. You're so money. Where'd that come from?
I think I'm on the same website.
You'll like this.
Tell me.
It is from the Nike commercials.
The Jordan just nailing shot after shot, right?
Jordan and,
Spike Lee.
You're so money.
That's funny.
Yep. There's a George Lucas Easter egg in it. The license plate on Trent's car is THX1138.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of license plates, did you ever see Made? Did you ever see the second movie that they made?
Yeah.
Vince Vaughn and John Favreau?
Yeah.
You know the whole limo thing in New York where they're driving with Vinnie Pastore? The tag was double down 11 or just double down, I think, was the license plate, which is like the whole reference back to this.
Yep. Favreau admitted the answering machine scene was influenced by a Jeff Garlin bit. Lyman thought that he thought that the answering machine had too many messages. He thought it wasn't good.
Didn't play, right.
Yep. The Reservoir Dogs scene was shot at 2 in the morning in an alley behind a 7-Eleven. The party scene was an actual party with future stars and influential producers. Friends of the crew lived in the Hollywood Hills on Temple Hill Drive. Two of the four residents, Wick Gottfried and Marty Bowen, later produced the Twilight movies. Also in attendance were actors Mike White and Adam Scott, Favreau's downstairs neighbor at the time. They shot at the Derby with actual customers as unpaid extras. We know that. A bar scene involving a live rabbit had to be cut. We just talked about that. And Favreau taught Heather Graham how to swing dance.
Hey, have you been to the Dresden, by the way, speaking of ballet?
I have not.
And what's the name of the act? Something in Elaine? What are they called?
Frankie and Elaine. I don't know. It's these two old people that have been there for 1,000 years.
I think they're still going.
I think they're still going, yeah.
The band in it is Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. They wind up opening as part of the halftime show at a Super Bowl. Where you're like, they're playing like bit things as swing music, and now they're going to be at the Super Bowl. They brought swing back.
Hey, by the way, this whiskey, it's going down pretty easy.
It's very easy drinking.
It is very, very painful, but it's easy drinking.
We talked about this with Deanna. This is your basic single cask. It's what Glenn Murray is. I've had a few single casks from them. You can't say it's like out on the fringes. It's just very solid.
Yeah, it's very approachable. It's an approachable whiskey.
Even at 60.4.
And while this is 60.4, so a novice wouldn't drink it. If you brought this down to, what were the classics, 43?
40. No, they were all 40.
40? Yeah. That's easily a gateway. You know, you could easily bring people into this.
I think the bourbon cask is like $25.
Something like that. Yeah, $25, $30. Yeah. Just a good solid whiskey. Yeah, if any Glen will do, this is certainly a Glen to grab.
I like it. Keep going with the facts.
Steven Spielberg cast Vince Vaughn in The Lost World, Jurassic Park, after seeing him in Swingers. I knew nothing of Vince until I saw Swingers. That made me interested in meeting him for Lost World. Lyman had sent Spielberg, a family friend, a tape of Swingers in order to get permission to use the music for Jaws. There you go. Just a few little tidbits on the movie.
I love the soundtrack. I think I have it somewhere. It might be on I think I have the CD somewhere. I think they spent more money on the soundtrack than they actually did filming. They paid more for the music rights than anything else.
It's just a really well knit together movie that they really did a nice job with. And Favreau and Vaughn, you can tell they're friends, and they really seem like they're friends, and they act off one another really well.
Yeah.
And they continue this through the other movies they're in together. You know, we've talked about before with other actors, ad-libbing and rolling stuff through and making it seem like it's something else. They really have some kind of connection together that it just plays.
They've got chemistry.
I love Favreau, and I wish he acted more. You know, he's become a director, producer, and I wish he acted more.
Yeah, I just saw Spider-Man 3, and he's in that as well, playing Happy Hogan again. And you do. You really wish that he was in this more. But, you know, in order to watch the third Spider-Man, I watched the first two with Tom Holland, and he's in both of those.
Yeah.
And it's just really funny to watch the interplay between him and Aunt May, and then with Spider-Man and all this stuff that goes on. And it's just, he's just a really good actor. And The Replacements has been on a cycle where he plays Danny Bateman, the psycho.
Oh, he was great in The Replacements.
Yep. Danny, get me the ball. Get me the ball, Danny. Oh God, I hope he doesn't kill somebody. But it's just, he's just really, I think he's underrated as an actor.
I do too.
And I think physically, because of his appearance, maybe he's limited in some of the things he can do, because he's a fairly big guy.
Yeah.
And he's lost a lot of hair, as all of us do as we get older. And maybe he's like, I'd rather be behind the camera than in front of it. Maybe I don't want to be out in front.
He was the Netflix foods show with Roy Choi.
Oh, the chef show.
Chef show. It's actually good to see him on screen. And actually, he's not acting per se. He's just being Jon Favreau. And he's an interesting guy. He's a very funny guy. He's very good at ad-libbing. He's very good at setting up a shot and setting up people around him for humor or whatever. I think he could be a great interviewer.
He did A Dinner for Five. I wish that was still on. That was a great show. Unfortunately, apparently, he's too busy doing everything else.
I am.
To make Dinner for Five.
You mean running the whole Star Wars empire?
The lazy no good, Nick.
We'll give Vince Vaughn his due. Vince Vaughn is a comedic genius as well. He is so funny. I don't know that he always has the best role that he's chosen, but he's funny in almost every role he chooses.
True Detective.
His serious roles, he plays serious stuff pretty well. And I don't know that I would think of him as a serious actor,
right?
But he does the serious stuff pretty good. But the funny stuff he's in, I wish he would do more of.
Right.
Like Favreau doing more acting, I wish Vaughn would do more funny stuff.
He's just so good in Wedding Crashers.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just everything about it. And, you know, all the comments back to Christopher Walken about, you know, it's just the booze dancing.
That's right. That's how we wound up with the title.
That's right.
And everything about it is so good. But you hope that he doesn't become like his total range of as a comic actor.
No.
And then he's 60 and he's still trying to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're like, yeah, no, don't do that anymore. Move on to something else.
He was in this season of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he fit in really well because he can do petty as good as Larry David.
Both of these guys have this old soul to them. They have an old Hollywood soul to them.
Yeah.
So they've got this connection to old Hollywood. So they can play alongside somebody that's 20 years older than them. Now, that granted, they're probably pushing 60, I'm guessing.
They're in the early 50s, I think.
In Curb, he's playing with the guys that are a lot older than him in some cases. Yeah. If you put him in a scene with Milton Berle, he would be fine. And same with Favreau. They can play nicely with that older set of comedians of a different era, and they mesh well. Harkening back to a movie from the 90s, classic one, Swingers, about Los Angeles, about drinking, about acting, about relationships, most importantly about friendship, and it's still a classic.
I'm a little surprised they didn't do like a 25-year thing for it. But again, maybe that's a COVID issue, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
What's the point? You can't get people together. Who knows? COVID. You've ruined everything.
It's almost a cult-like movie. I have no idea how much money it made in its history. Probably not a huge blockbuster.
I think it did okay for like a small independent film. I think it did pretty well. And it's managed to last, you know, it's still out there. And again, it was a fantastic jumping off point for a lot of really good careers.
Yeah. Oh, that's undoubt.
The guy sold the movie to Miramax for $5 million. The first theatrical release, they made $4.5 million. And then it got a huge play on video when video was something people did.
Right.
You know, when you actually went to Blockbuster and Hometown Video and everywhere else to go and get a film. So, you know, it made the rounds. So I think it more than made back its initial money.
Per IMDb, anyone want to take a guess on the budget?
$500,000.
Mike?
I'd say $1 million. They went to a lot of places.
$200,000.
Wow.
And they sold it for $5
million. That's fantastic.
It
that's
grossed.
That's a pretty good return.
It grossed $4.5 million in the U.S. and Canada.
But then it got huge play on the video rentals. Yeah. So it more than made back its money.
$200,000.
That's fantastic.
87% at Rotten Tomatoes.
87%. There you go.
So
I love it. I mean, you ask me at any point in time, you know, just movies that I'll just sit down and watch at any time, anywhere. I don't get tired of it. I have not gotten tired of it yet. There's not one point where I go back and say, again? No. Every single time.
Roger Ebert, 3 out of 4 stars. Not terribly original idea, yet the movie is sweet, funny, and observant.
Right.
He's not wrong.
They're not reinventing the wheel.
But it's a movie with heart.
And they're stealing from everyone, which I admire. Everybody steals from everybody.
Yes. This is, like I said, they have taken all the things that they fell in love with Hollywood and filmmaking and comedy, and gotten their first $200,000 to spend and made this movie.
One last thing. They actually came up with wingman. So you go into a bar as two people and you're the wingman.
That was their phrase?
Well, at least that's what they claim anyway. Who knows? Oh. Maybe it's from somewhere
else. And don't forget, they got Heather Graham to close it out, which was fantastic. Because she was hot off of like Twin Peaks. And was she Roller Girl at this point in Boogie Nights?
No.
Or not yet?
I don't think Boogie Nights was out yet.
No. Heather Graham's great. She's just really, really, she's cool. She's funny. She's good. She's cute. I always liked her. And the final dance scene was fantastic. That was just great.
That was great.
You grows up and you grows up and you grows up.
Excellent choice, boys. Excellent whiskey. Excellent movie. Another one that we enjoyed. One show, one drink. Another one bites the dust, actually. Want to close it out, Mike and Angelo?
I got nothing.
You got nothing.
Mike's got nothing.
I'm spent. And I'm flurrying from the 60%. Suffering succotash.
All right, I'll take us out, boys. So you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Audible, and wherever else you get your podcasts. Or worst case scenario, you know, just hop on over to boozedancing.com. And you can find us there and email us at boozedancing@gmail.com with questions, comments, drink, cocktail, show suggestions. We'd love to hear from you.
Because you, our audience, are so money.
Oh, so money. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
Cheers.